the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that's ready to crown its EFL kings at no cost to the taxpayer and without Ant or Deck in the vicinity. Today, Championship, Coventry and Sunderland book their playoff spots on a memorable last day. Derby choke, Posh prosper in the League One playoff race. Cambridge are the big winners at the bottom as MK Dons, Accrington and Morecambe also drop out of the third tier. In League Two, Northampton lay the ghosts of last season to rest, whilst Mansfield miss out on the playoffs by a single goal to Salford. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. And that is that for the regular season in the Football League. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin to talk it all through. It's always a funny feeling, isn't it, Adrian? I know we've got the playoffs to look forward to, but you think most of the teams are done and dusted. That's it. We'll see the retained lists and a round of sackings within the next few days, I would have thought.
We certainly will. It feels even weirder this year because there's no sun. There's no bone hard pitches. It just feels like we're just coming out of winter, basically. So yeah, it's a strange feeling. Players all going off on holiday, thinking about which club they might join in the summer. Yeah, look, I remember this time when I was out of contract, and it's a nerve wracking period because the future is very much unknown unless you've lined something up. So there'll be a lot of footballers out there today thinking, oh, and breathe, and I'm going to go on holiday, but also thinking, am I still going to be a footballer come July? That's the worry.
Sam, you must be absolutely thrilled not to have to think about QPR for a bit.
Yeah, that was the most predictable result, wasn't it, of the weekend, that they were going to regress to what they've been over the last few months. Yeah, miserable. And that's going to be really interesting what happens there. I think that's going to be an incredibly busy summer. Conversation I was having yesterday was how many of those players at Sunderland in particular that have snuck into the playoffs had already booked their holidays, Clarkie. What do you reckon? Pritchard looked a little bit emotionless, if that's a word, full time after he bent one into the corner directly and he was off to Dubai this morning.
I think there's every chance if he might have got caught out. Let's hope that the old cancellation button pressed.
Well, we'll talk more about the race for the playoffs shortly. First, though, how about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+, and remember, always be gamble aware. Okay, we're going to talk about a significant piece of news next. To get through today, but we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the new EFL TV rights deal that Sky secured at the end of last week. EFL clubs have voted through a record new 5-year live TV deal with Sky Sports. It's worth £935 million. It'll see 1,000 matches either broadcast on TV or streamed each season. It starts from 2024-25, and it represents a 50% increase in value on the previous deal, which was signed in 2018. Now, the 3 p.m. blackout will stay as part of the deal. DAZN wanted to scrap that had they won the bid. Now, those 1,000 live games, they break down like this: 328 from the Championship, 248 from League One, 248 from League Two, all 15 playoff matches, all 93 Carabao Cup matches, and all 127 EFL Trophy matches. Sam, this is great news for the EFL, right? Sky get a lot of stick for messing about with kickoff times, and that'll probably get even worse under this. But the fact remains that this ought to safeguard the future of many EFL clubs and avoid another Bury-like situation.
Yeah, you would hope so. There's often been conversations, discussions between us about discrepancy between what the teams even in the lower reaches of the Premier League accrue in terms of television money in comparison to the teams in the Championship and further down the ladder. So that gap has been too vast. It's probably added to the woes of some of the clubs that have found themselves in financial problems. So yeah, good on that front. I think there's been an insatiable desire, hasn't there, for more football over the last few years. I thought we saw that during the pandemic days. People want to be watching their clubs. People want more of League One and League Two as well. I think that's a real pertinent point here. That's something I've seen crop up copious amounts of times on social media. And now supporters are going to get that. The traditionalists maybe will be disappointed that it's going to be different kickoff times and different days of the week. But I think if you ask a supporter of a club in the lower reaches of League Two, they can watch their team on TV on more occasions, they'd snap your hand off. So it's going to be some winners, there's going to be some losers. But I think in the main, the coverage is greater. They're improving, I think, in terms of the behind the scenes stuff, the different types of features that we've seen this year, different types of comms teams, and hopefully lots more work for us, Muggins.
Yeah, Clarky, you'll be all over Salford versus Leicester's under-21s in the EFL Trophy. What we want the clubs to do, though, is be responsible with the money, right? And not see it as a big pot of gold that is limitless, but be sensible with it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to blow it all on big signings and huge wages that you can't really afford. Yeah, it should help sustainability for the club, shouldn't it? They shouldn't really have any excuses now to get themselves into financial hot water. Will it affect attendances? That's the question mark. I don't think massively, if I'm honest. I think that most people that go to see their team want to go and see their team pretty much every week. So it will just allow supporters that are unable to get to matches because of logistics to see their teams in action more often. I mean, I was adding it all up. I don't think there are 2,000 matches in total. I think we're talking about 1,900, something along those lines. So over half of matches will be broadcast. Now, will they be broadcast with pundits and co-commentators and commentators, or will it be single camera stuff like we've seen on the Red Button? We'll have to wait and see. I suspect there'll be a lot of that going on. But yeah, access to the games, as long as it doesn't impact crowds too much, because no one wants to watch games in empty stadiums with no atmospheres. Then that's good.
Well, look, we saw what a brilliant TV product the Football League is across this bumper bank holiday weekend. We'll run through all the last day drama next. So ahead of Monday's action in the Championship, we knew the top two and the bottom three. All that was left to decide was who'd be joining Luton and Middlesbrough in the playoffs. Millwall, Coventry, Blackburn, West Brom and Sunderland were all vying to do so. All Millwall needed to do was win and they'd be there. And there were twists, there were turns, and there was drama.
Throw on. You know what throw on means? It's a flick on. Then another flick on. He pulls them back and in off the bar. One more. Goalkeeper goes goal. And Millwall on their way to the playoffs as it stands.
There it goes to the far post. Oh, it's been lashed in by Ajayi. His second of the season. And West Brom are back in front. They've got renewed hope here. Smuggler through to Ekwan. It's yellow! The first twist here. 6,000 Weir signers roar. Sunderland have to win and they have to hope. And they are doing what they need to do. Edges. Britton Diaz. Absolute sickener for Gary Ryan and co. Sunderland's home form has been poor. Their away form has been absolutely magnificent. And Tony Mowbray has worked seemingly the impossible and led the youngest squad in the Championship, fresh out of League One, into the Championship playoffs. Coventry's fans know that the playoff place is already secure. The Sky Blues have got the point they needed. A draw at Borough keeps the momentum going.
Sam, we've got to start with Millwall, haven't we? 3-1 up at half-time and being serenaded by the home supporters and then cut to what? An hour later and they're being booed off by the few hundred that had remained for the lap of honour. Quite a way to throw it away.
Yeah, it's an amazing game. I watched the majority of this. Could have been better positioned as well. Bradshaw had a goal marginally ruled out for offside. Great reaction from him as well after the ball struck off the post. Tell you what, this is the most impressed I've been by Blackburn all season. I haven't seen these patterns developing. I don't know if it's quite a new thing. I saw fullbacks in midfield quite often, Picker in the left back and Rankin Costello, who we know loves to maraud forward. I saw him taking up some positions in field. I saw him going really high at times and Travis, one of the number eights, tucking into midfield. Really good stuff. Don't really play with a centre forward. And that's probably something we've criticised them about this year. Hedges was up there at times. Brereton Diaz. Dolan came on and they made two substitutions at halftime, I think, which completely changed the flow, the tempo of the game. And I was laughing, you know, when it's 3-1 to Millwall and you can touch it, those Millwall lads, when that second goes in for Blackburn, me being a striker at the other end of the pitch, I'd have been like, oh, no. You just know it's going to be half an hour of relentless pressure. And that's pretty much, just like, oh, no, we're just going to be hanging on for dear life. It's in the hands of the gods now, really. But Blackburn were, I thought they were excellent. The way they moved the ball, there was no comparison. And again, Millwall have been brilliant. And Gary Rowett, I think, has done a fantastic job in getting them to this point. They didn't lose it yesterday, by the way. They lost it at home to Huddersfield, at home to Birmingham, drawing with Luton. You know, four games have taken 1 point, I think, at the tail end of the season. That's where this has been lost. The pressure got to them. And again, yesterday, I watched Millwall for 15, 20 minutes. They can blow teams apart. They can ruin teams. And that atmosphere plays a big part. But you've got to be able to have attacks, sustained attacks later in the game. You've got to be able to control the ball. You can't be under pressure for 75 minutes. Otherwise, there's just a, for me, when I go to the Den, there's a feeling of inevitability that they might get over the line if the centre-halves win all their headers and the keeper has a good game. But yesterday, Blackburn were too sophisticated in their setup and had the end product as well. So yeah, harsh on them, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, sick for Millwall, obviously, because of that's done me out of a bit of work as well. Yeah.
Adrian, like Sam said, you know, it's been a brilliant season for Millwall. And I sort of thought that, but I've just double checked it and they've actually got 1 point less than they managed in the entirety of last season. So has it been a great season or have they bottled it?
You could argue they bottled it in the final half of the season. I think that much is fair to say for the reasons that Sam outlined. They had a little bit of a panic up. They lost their shape and they allowed Blackburn to be rampant. By the way, Ben Brereton-Diaz, what a way for him to sign off. Been a great player, hasn't he, down the years for Blackburn Rovers. He's off this summer and it was a terrific way for him to finish. Now, I think Millwall have made a step forward. They've built a partnership up top that I think they can build around. Those two guys are really exciting. And they've played slightly better football. They've got a few more strings to their bow. Obviously, they weren't really on show in this game, but I think that they have moved their tactical game forward a little bit, slightly less reliant on set pieces, even though they're still a big, big part of what they do. So no, I think it's progress, but if truth be told, had they made it to the Premier League, I think they were ready. I mean, I'm not sure that too many of the teams in the playoffs are ready, but there would have been an awful lot of work for Gary Rowett and Millwall to do had they made it. So maybe it's for the best. Maybe another season where they can grow and develop a little bit more will put them in a position where they are ready.
Barkie, another subject we've spoken about. Gary Rowett took Watmore off on a hat-trick. I think Burke went off as well, and Bradshaw. And I know Bradshaw's had to be wrapped in cotton wool because he's pretty much their only number nine, but I found the substitutions odd as well. I didn't have the sound up, so I don't know what the reaction was from the crowd, but I found that strange when they, in essence, needed that goal.
Yeah, I always find that a little bit odd when managers in the moment of need take off their strikers, or even when a game's in the balance, you might be ahead. Were they ahead when he made those changes? I'm not sure.
I think they...
Or at least level.
Maybe level, and then when they went behind, he made another couple, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I want my best goal scorers on the pitch. I mean, it happened at Arsenal the other week. Jesus was off, Martinelli was off. And when Arsenal were putting balls into the box at West Ham last 5 minutes, who's there? You want Jesus there. You want Martinelli in the box. It's the same maybe for Millwall. Look, Gary Rowett's a very experienced manager. You wouldn't expect him to get flustered by these kind of occasions, but they do impact decision making, don't they? Sometimes you can make odd calls in the heat of the moment when the pressure begins to build. So yeah, but look, maybe you'll look back at that and think, you know what, I need to learn from it.
So Millwall couldn't get the job done. Coventry went up to Borough, knowing that they needed a point to book their place in the playoffs. Adrian, you were there for this one. Not massively nervy, maybe, when Cameron Archer equalised, or did Coventry always have a measure of control?
I didn't really feel nervy, no. I don't think at any stage of the afternoon Coventry dropped out of the playoffs, but at one point it was looking a little bit precarious at one apiece. They started the game brilliantly. And I love that attitude, because obviously they only needed a point. and you think, well, how are they going to approach it? Well, the team selection said, we're going to attack it, because he stuck with the two strikers, Godin and Gyökeres, instead of going with Jamie Allen and the four-man box midfield. So that was a positive start, and boy, did they come out of the traps. The first 40 minutes, Middlesbrough did nothing, really. They were just blown away by Coventry. Gus Hamer was great, scored a superb goal. Pressing all over the pitch was excellent. Gyökeres was an unbelievable handful down the side to the centre-halves and running the channels. I mean, they couldn't really contain him. They should have been 3-0 up. And then they went in at half-time, one apiece. Switched off from a short corner. Coventry, by the way, had only conceded 5 goals from set pieces all season, the lowest of any team in the Championship. So they'd have been smarting from that concession. But in the second half, they kind of weathered a mini storm from Borough, defended very well. The three centre-halves were excellent. And then the last 20 was a bit of a non-event. I think neither team really pushed that hard for the winning goal. It was almost like they shook on it and said, right, we'll see you in a few days' time for the playoff semi-final. So, it was good. It was great scenes with the Coventry fans. It was only in 2018 that I was at the game at Notts County when they were in the playoff semi-final in League Two. And look, they could, in a few weeks' time, they could be a Premier League club. That's proper fairy tale stuff for Coventry City. You know, I'm not saying it's crazy gang Wimbledon of old, but not that far off in terms of the ascent up the leagues. And when you consider all of the off-field dramas that they've had and the misfortune and the mismanagement and the fact that they've had to go and play at different stadiums, you know, the ownership's been a mess. I just think it's astonishing what Mark Robbins and the players and his staff have achieved over the last few seasons. It's been stunning, really.
Yeah, for hugely impressive management and fairy tale potential. See also Sunderland going for back-to-back promotions now. 3-0 they won at Preston to pinch the final place. This was a tremendous performance, dominant in possession and in terms of shots too, Sam. They're the team of kids sneaking up on the rails, aren't they? I guess some of them have still got the nous from last season of how to get up. But this is a massive surprise, right? Having changed manager early in the season and the average age of that squad, this is a tremendous achievement on their behalf.
Yeah, huge achievement. I didn't probably say it before the game, but I thought it was a good game for him. Oh, we did, didn't we, Clarky? We said Sunderland, I think, would win at Preston. I thought it was a good game. You know, Preston had that little flurry of victories, but then when push comes to shove, they fell away spectacularly. So I thought Sunderland would go there and win. I mean, you look at their back four that started yesterday: Gooch, Hume, 09, Sirkin. I mean, it's incredible. No centre-halves, really. I mean, Luke 09 goes in there and is ridiculously aggressive for such a...
he just is, isn't he?
Such a mild-mannered...
He's a crazy player, isn't he?
He is.
I interviewed him a few years back and thought, what a lovely guy. And then I went and watched him. He's just an absolute... I don't know. He's just here, there and everywhere. He's like a bit of a loose cannon.
He makes up for what he lacks in a few inches by just getting steamed into people, doesn't he? So he's brilliant. I thought that the two midfield players, actually, Ekwa and Neil, were very good yesterday, Ekwa in particular, but it looked like a bit of a masterstroke from Mowbray at halftime, taking off Sirkin, I think it was, for Pritchard, essentially took off one of his back four and put on an extra attacker, changed the shape, and that changed the flow of the game. Pritchard, who continually on Sky was being called like the old man of the squad, the granddad or whatever at 30, I think he is. So it's remarkable. You know, got Joe Gellhart, but it is these little diminutive forward players playing up against, obviously, bruising centre-halves. That's causing the damage right now for Sunderland. So, yeah, this has been an incredible run. And they go into the playoffs now with some real form players. And it's going to be a fantastic matchup. I think Luton probably would have taken Sunderland, and Sunderland will probably not be overawed by facing Luton, and there'll be a bit of a contrast. Home advantage will probably pay for quite a lot in this game, and I just think it's important to say that we would never have had any of these teams other than Middlesbrough in the shake-up. You would have had Watford, you would have had Norwich, and you'd have had West Brom if push came to shove. So to have three kind of wild cards in there, I think just makes it a brilliant spectacle for neutrals. And all those teams should emerge with enormous credit despite what happens in the next fortnight.
Definitely. I can't wait to see Luton Sunderland. these sort of clever attacking midfielders that are capable of scoring brilliant goals up against Luton's defence, which is strong and powerful and well organised. And then at the other end of the pitch, that's going to be fun because you've got Morris and Adebayo, two units up against this makeshift defence featuring no centre-halves. How are they going to cope, Sunderland, with that? It's going to be a fascinating watch. I know the league games were both one apiece, so I wouldn't expect a lot between them over the two legs, but great dynamics at both ends of the pitch. Real contrast.
Yeah, so that is Sunderland-Luton first leg at the Stadium of Light Saturday at 5:30. The return is on Tuesday the 16th. Coventry v Borough this coming Sunday at 2:00, and they will play again on Wednesday. Quinbet have it as Middlesbrough 13-8 to go up, Luton 5-2, Cov 7-2, and Sunderland 11-4. Adrian, let's have a mention for Huddersfield, because they stayed up by beating Sheffield United in their game in hand, which was played on Thursday of last week. It means that Reading are down along with Blackpool and Wigan. But we said it before, we totally wrote Huddersfield off, didn't we? Even after Warnock had been there, he's bowed out. He says he might be back in February somewhere. But astonishing from them, because they were dead and buried.
I said it on this podcast. I said, well, Huddersfield are gone. And it's down to the rest to battle for the last two, or to avoid being in the last two. It's amazing what Neil Warnock has achieved there. He made a few tactical tweaks. He's shown a little bit of tactical flexibility as well. You know, taking a horses for courses approach to each different match, going with different systems or different players in different roles. He's really thought about it. It's not just been the old Warnock arm around the shoulder. Aren't you a good player, son? You're gonna run through brick walls for me. I know you are. It's not just been that. He's worked really hard, I think, behind the scenes to identify which players he can trust, which ones he can rely on, and he's adjusted his game plans for each match superbly. You know, they've won the last three in a row, lost one of the last eight, winning five of those. So that is tremendous. It's pretty much playoff form, isn't it, from Huddersfield under Neil Warnock. That was what was required. No one thought it was achievable, but he's delivered. And is it going to be the last time we see him or not? Because I don't know if we'll be able to resist the temptation. You know he's going to get the call next January, February or March. Somebody in trouble is going to put out the SOS to Neil Warnock. Is he going to pick up the phone or not? Or is he going to bow out on what I think is an incredible high?
Yeah, why can't it just be Bristol City or something for him? So he's only got, what, 2.5 hours?
Sam. I was just looking at the table and thinking, where would he go? I've got to return to Cardiff. But he lives in Devon, doesn't he? Down south somewhere.
Of course.
What about Reading, Sam? They've been circling the drain for a few years. They've got financial woes and restrictions on buying players, etc. It might be a while before we see them back in the Championship, you think?
Quite possibly. I don't know what the plan is there in terms of the managerial appointment, how many of the still talented squad are going to remain. I think that's something consistently I've felt about Reading. Good individuals. I thought they were hindered badly by injury this season, especially in a defensive department. But I didn't think the manager was up to much. I said it continually when I saw them, you know, on various platforms. You know, when I went to cover games on the radio, I felt he could be getting more out of the squad. But it looked like they were on for survival, and obviously the penalty comes into play and they've been really up against it since. So it's a big blow for them. It's a big blow because Reading supporters, Reading as a club, they consider themselves as, you know, a team that should be knocking on the door of the Premier League, considering they've been there, been a constant in the Championship. So I think it's 20 odd years since they've been down in the third tier, and the squad's going to need reinvigorated in the summer. I don't know if Noel Hunt is going to be the man to take it on. Maybe he could do at League One level. Maybe he would be the type of appointment actually to galvanise if they're going to maybe lose a few of the high earners and approach it in a different way. But yeah, it's a desperate time for them really, because you wouldn't have envisaged this happening probably.
Yeah, I'd rip up the squad and start again. I really would. And I'll tell you why. There's one big alarm that I think sort of is ringing loud and clear here is the away form. Okay, at home, they were top half level, Reading, pretty good and comfortable in their own environment. I always think a test of a team is when you go on the road in a different environment where everything's a little bit uncomfortable, people are on you. Then you see who are the leaders. You see who's tough, who fancies it, who really wants to dig in for each other. And they've won 3 of 23. I mean, it's pretty pathetic, really. They've scored 15 goals in 23 away matches. That is, I think that's the epitome of being powder puff. I really do. I think that's where Reading need to improve. They probably just need to get a few different characters in, re-energise the squad with maybe young hungry players. There's probably too many older guys that, yeah, just don't have that hunger anymore.
All right, well, they're heading for the third tier, and that's where we're going to go next. In League One, we knew Plymouth and Ipswich were going up automatically. Plymouth were crowned champions after winning at Port Vale. The real drama was in the chase for the final playoff place and the battle to stay in the division. Playoff-wise, it was between Derby and Peterborough for the last spot.
Johnson, Patterson, giving chance as well. Patterson may get to it. Wordsworth in. Johnson goes down. Penalty. How big a moment is this?
So, Sam, you were on comms for the game at Oakwell. Posh, worth the win on the day?
Yeah, they were. Barnsley had their moments in the first half. Penalty appeal on Norwood, disallowed goal. Credit to Michael Duff. You know, when you were speculating as to what's going to happen on the final day, rotation. We saw Luton do it actually in the Championship, didn't we? Don't think they had a senior striker in the squad. So I was maybe anticipating something similar from Barnsley, but that was Barnsley at their strongest. Maybe apart from Mads Andersen, who should be back for the playoffs, but they had a go in the first half. I thought that Darren Ferguson, partly because of circumstances, he didn't have Nathan Thompson and Ogbetta as two fullbacks, essentially. So he played two wingers, Ward and Burrows there. Really attacking lineup. But I thought the difference actually was Jack Taylor, who's a player who has impressed me this season. Normally plays in a central midfield partnership, invariably with Norburn, but he played as a 10 in this game. So it probably gave them a little bit more control in the middle, a bit of solidity with those flying fullbacks. But he was getting into loads of nice bits of space, getting turned. He was linking the defence and the forward players. And he scored the second goal. And that was because his starting position was really high. He went and pressed, won the ball, won a corner. And he was on hand to nod in the second goal. So his performance, I thought, was excellent. Darren Ferguson, brilliant tactically, getting it right. Clark Harris, we always know, is good for a goal. And I know they didn't need the 3-goal margin in the end because Derby fluff their lines, but going into the game, I thought, outside of Ipswich, there's no team in League One that I'd want in that type of scenario. Peterborough have shown throughout their seasons in League One and throughout this campaign, even recently, they can thump sides, especially away from home. So I had no qualms that they'd be able to get over the line. In the end, Wednesday did them a little bit of a favour. Peterborough, good value for this, and it sets up, I wouldn't say that David V. Goliath, but Peterborough will be the underdogs, and no doubt in my mind they can definitely probably win one of those games. Yeah, over two legs, it's going to be tough considering the gulf that's been between the teams in terms of depth of squad and the points difference in the league.
That's Posh taking on Sheffield Wednesday, first leg at London Road on Friday, return on Thursday the 18th, and Bolton Barnsley first leg of that one on Saturday. Then they'll play again at Oakwell on the 19th. Quinbet have got Sheffield Wednesday favourites at 13-8, Bolton 10-3, Barnsley 5-2, Posh are the outsiders at 4-1, although Adrian Durham pointing out on Twitter that Peterborough have won three of the four playoff campaigns they've participated in, so you never know. All right, this is the part, Adrian, that I've been waiting for. Let's talk about Derby County losing at Sheffield Wednesday and blowing their chance to get into the playoffs. So they came into the day in sixth, but then Curtis Davis gives away a penalty. Really harsh to send him off, though, right?
I didn't think it was a penalty, and I didn't think it was a red card. I thought it was ridiculously harsh. I actually felt it was a dive. A lot of people would disagree with that. But for me, he's trying to get back in, obviously trying to recover his position. And people would say his arms are up. Well, where do you want his arms to be? Behind his back. You know, you move your arms when you run. And I think he barely laid a finger on the player who went down incredibly easily. I think it's a shocking decision. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to take credit away from Peterborough because they delivered on the final day. They've been amazing under Ferguson. And that playing Ward and Burrows at fullback was really, really brave because he hasn't wanted to do it. He hasn't wanted to do it for months and months, Ferguson. So in the biggest game of all, he chanced his arm and it paid off. But yeah, Derby will have regrets because they've had a miserable end to the season. Too many drawn games, too many flat performances. And this kind of was another. They were game with 10 men, but it was always going to be tough, wasn't it? But the bottom line is, in this match, the referee killed them. I don't know. What's your view on it? Because I know you might be slightly biased, Matt. What's Sam's view on the pen? I just thought the ref got it wrong.
I want to be careful because I don't want to offend anyone, but let's call it what it was. It's a dive.
Yeah.
It's 100% a dive. And people that say, oh, it's not a genuine attempt to play the ball, or we gave the referee a decision to make. Nonsense. Mm. Nonsense. He's trying to get himself into a position to make the challenge. And with that, he's put a slight hand finger on the player. We have to have contact. You've got to be able to grapple. You've got to have a little bit of that in the game. Otherwise, what are we watching?
The tragedy, though, Sam, is if VAR had been on duty, I'm telling you, they wouldn't have owned it. Yeah, because referees don't see it like the way that we saw that incident. They don't see it the same.
No. It was a mess. The other interesting thing from this game, like reading some of the Derby supporters afterwards and all that, there seems to be quite a balanced outlook on this. I thought it would be the headline, Derby bottle it, Derby crash out, whatever, you know, big club in the third tier, haven't made it. I don't think it's a disaster. I think Paul Warne will know that it was an outside chance really to make it up this year. And I think he'll be waking up and thinking, if I can rebuild, if I'm given the tools, if I'm given the ability to ship the Deadwood out and build this squad. There's a lot of young lads, remember, they were in really difficult predicament. You know, some guys like Curtis coming towards the end as well. He's got a lot of work to do, but who's better placed than Paul Warne to make a run at it with his own squad next season?
I think they've got a great chance of getting promoted. Sorry, Matt.
No, I agree with you. I think they'll absolutely walk it next season with Paul Warne. It'd just be interesting to see if they can keep hold of the likes of Erin Cashin and maybe somebody will come sniffing around for one last dance in the Championship for McGoldrick, but we'll see as far as Derby go. So they were disappointed. Let's turn our attention to the relegation zone, where disappointment is probably not a strong enough word to describe how the likes of Accrington, MK Dons and Morecambe are feeling. They all went down. Cambridge pulled off the great escape. This is what it sounded like on the terraces. So a 2-0 win against Forest Green, coupled with defeat for Morecambe at Exeter and MK Dons failing to win at Burton, enough to see Cambridge finish on the right side of the dotted line. They were second bottom at the start of April and third bottom at the start of this month. Incredible then, Adrian, that they've managed to pull it off. As we've said before, good on them for sticking by the manager. We didn't see this one coming either.
I thought they could do it. I did. I thought they could do it under Mark Bonner because I think he's a manager that's totally in touch with the team and the fans. And I think they're all connected. There was at no stage did they really panic that much, I think. And they would have accepted their fate had they not made it. But I looked at the fixture list and I just thought if they can nick a couple of big wins or draws against these tough opponents, the last few games are winnable. And obviously they mucked up at Burton. So to bounce back, it was a gimme. This was 3 points really handed on a plate to them. Forest Green were never going to win this game. I think Cambridge always had it within their ability to take the 3 points here. Sam Smith is the hero. I think we'll probably in a couple of pods time maybe get around to teams of the season. Sam Smith might not make it into the League One team of the season, but there'd be a strong argument to put him in there for his contribution to Cambridge at the business end of this campaign. Phenomenal. He scored in 7 of the last 9 matches. And those goals have basically helped Cambridge survive in the third tier, which is not where they belong. They're such a small club. They're a League Two size club, really. There are bigger clubs in the National League than Cambridge United. So, yeah, well done, Sam Smith. Well done, the team. I think in January they recruited well. Morrison came in, do you remember that? And, you know, having the sort of leader coming back into the dressing room, I think that was a positive move as well. So, yeah, tremendous. They just brought in a little bit of nous and experience to what was a really young dressing room, and I think that really helped them.
Well, Accrington were relegated despite coming from behind to beat Oxford. Speaking about their relegation and the season in general, boss John Coleman was not exasperated, not infuriated, not vexed or irked or embittered. He was... Help me out, John.
I think the word that you're looking for my emotions this season is frustration. Frustration with myself for I know I've made mistakes and I knew early on I'd made mistakes and then you're trying to rectify that. Frustration not being able to sign the players that you target, which it did last summer, and then this January window was horrendous in the knockbacks that I had.
Sam, Accrington and Morecambe then. Anything you'd like to say about them? As John Coleman said, he wasn't that happy with his transfer business. And I guess for Morecambe, the fact that Cole Stockton couldn't replicate his form from last season is a big factor in their relegation.
Yeah, I think there's more than meets the eye there. There was, as far to say, a falling out because I don't know, but he's obviously a free transfer now. So there was clearly interest there, probably had his head turned. There was a period when he wasn't featuring much at the start of the season. Obviously, I don't think he scored till December the 11th or 12th, if memory serves me right. So to finish with 7 in 4 games shows you what they could have been this season had he have been fully focused and at it. But the away form, 12 points, just the 2 wins and the start to the season as well, always kept them up against it. 2 wins in their first 22. So I am slightly surprised, probably because of the Derek Adams factor. And I'm surprised about Accrington because of the John Coleman factor. And interesting to hear him say that he got it wrong. I think at home, they've lost their edge. They lost 6 of their final 7, which is incredible, especially when I think back to my torturous evenings of playing at that miserable ground where I've been battered and beaten many a time. The lack of strikers, again, quite simplistic, but for as long as we've been working together on the EFL, they've had those lads out and on league, Bishop and Charles, to name just 2. Billy Key, before that, if you remember, Jackson, Caden Jackson. So they've always had talismanic front men that probably get them a lot of points. So I think that's a big reason. Bad discipline, 7 reds as well this season. That flurry, didn't they, quite recently? So that's another thing that they've probably not got quite right or had to look at. So I am surprised because he's been such a brilliant manager. They've punched well above their weight for so many years, and you can say the same about Morecambe. So we'll see how they adapt next year. But I just think they seem to be pretty well-run clubs, really. They seem to have good people. And I'm sure they'll refocus and be amongst the favourites to come straight back.
Yeah, there's an old adage, and I've said this before, you're only ever as good as your strikers, aren't you? And Accrington, just the pale imitation of the previous strikers they've had, as Sam said. And the same with Cole Stockton. Last year's Stockton v this year's Stockton. chalk and cheese. So, yeah, they make the difference. That's why they get paid the big bucks, like Sam Parkin did all those years ago when he was raking it in. When he was, pulling in bags of sand for fun.
I can't think of a striker in the mould of Cole Stockton who scores as many amazing goals.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I scored two, maybe, you know, from outside the box or volley. He scored seven already in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. Yeah. Not to think back to last year when he was scoring from the halfway line and volleys and dribbles. I mean, it's unbelievable for someone who, in essence, hasn't got brilliant mobility and is more about taking on his chest than popping it off. I mean, it's outstanding ability he's got.
Where's he land? Where's he land, I wonder? Wrexham?
That's a good shout.
Yeah, yeah, on double the money that he's on now. He probably won't end up at MK Dons, Clarkey. He knocked my confidence a little bit by saying that he saw Cambridge staying up. I don't think any of us saw that MK Dons would be getting relegated, did we? Crikey. From playoffs last season to this, Pete Winkelman swearing at fans outside the Pirelli Stadium after they just couldn't get a goal against Burton despite all those chances. This is a calamity for the franchise.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, it's a real fall from grace, isn't it? They had something good going, didn't they, with Liam Manning, and it just couldn't keep it going. I think, again, it was the poor recruitment last summer. Let a lot of good players go. Not let them go. They returned to parent clubs or were sold. And then the ones that came in weren't of the same level. And that did for Manning. And then in the end, Mark Jackson comes in. And I was actually quite positive and optimistic about them because he seemed to have really stabilised them at the back. But, yeah, as we saw on the final day, just not able to score enough goals. I mean, they gave it a good go, didn't they? I mean, 31 shots. I think they can look themselves in the mirror and say, you know, we didn't leave anything out there. It was just a case of a resilient Burton side who deserve credit, by the way, because they had nothing to play for. They beat Cambridge in that penultimate game when they didn't have to. And then they held MK Dons. So, you know, they held up their side of the bargain for all of the other sides in and around the bottom end of the table. And that's why I love English football. I love it. I love it because there's no such thing as a dead rubber. They'd always try. You'd always get tryers. Yeah, I love that.
Four wins at home all season, MK Dons. I think that tells the story. And that's the 18th time they've failed to score. And amazing if you take two, maybe three of your best players out of a starting 11, how a team can just diminish. And I think that this is you can look at all the different reasons. And I agree with Clarkey to an extent about the lack of quality coming in. With the replacements, the change of manager, you can look at all that. But in essence, this is a team that's been stripped of their better players and they've crumbled.
Is the stadium a factor? Like, I'm just chucking out. It's just something that comes into my head. It's so empty, isn't it? It's so sparse. It's too big for them. And it's just not an intimidating place for rival teams to play.
And Ipswich, for example, will take 6,000 or 7,000 there. I mean, I'm speculating there, but, you know, the away team to take a massive following. It's a lovely place to play, isn't it? As a player, you'd really enjoy that in League One. So there could be something in that, certainly this year.
It didn't affect them last year, did it? But it's just, I feel that if they were in a more compact stadium, that they'd have a better record.
Go back to the hockey stadium.
I was just going to say that. Yeah,
vintage shout.
Did you play there?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Did you?
And it was like a cow field as well. So, yeah. Go back there.
You say that, just looked up the capacity because I wasn't sure. It's 30,000 apparently, and the biggest crowd they had was 15,500 for a League Cup game against Leicester. So yeah, that's a factor. And as we were saying about strikers, that's a factor too when you have 31 shots at goal and only six of them are on target. Anyway, so those sides going down to League Two, and that's where we're going to head next. Well, Northampton had a sense of deja vu all over again as they had their fate in their own hands on the final day for the second season running. Remember, they missed out on automatic promotion on goal difference last term, and no such dramas this time around. A 1-0 win at Tranmere, coupled with Stockport's failure to beat Hartlepool, meant the Cobblers finished 4 points ahead of the playoffs places. Here's boss John Brady talking to BBC Northampton.
Especially what happened at the end of last season where Scunthorpe thought, let's get it right, Fielding. A youth team, and it wasn't right, but we had to grit our teeth and go again, and to get 163 points in 2 years. But the hardest thing this over what's happened, this doesn't usually happen to us. We don't come out on the right side, and I'm not sure it has really sunk in at the moment because, you know, there was a final twist to the tail. The boys are telling me that there's a penalty on the 96th minute and you're thinking, here we go again. You just push to the, you push right to the very edge all the time.
Adrian, do you think that they deserved it this time around? I know, as we've been talking about goals and the importance of getting them, that they actually scored one more than the top two teams in the division.
Yeah, well, they had a goal scorer in Sam Hoskins, so that made a tremendous difference. And what a goal it was from him on the final day. Brilliant volley into the corner. You know, this is a guy that's not even really a striker. He has had a worldie of a campaign, 22 goals, 7 assists. They deserve massive credit. They deserve, when we wax lyrical about Plymouth, as we have done over and over again, I think we kind of almost have to put Northampton in that same category, because this time last year, they were broken, or just in a few weeks away from a year ago. They were broken because on the final day, Bristol Rovers somehow overcame that ridiculous goal swing. And then they lost to Mansfield in the playoff semi-final. And I was there and they were on their knees, absolutely on their knees. And you thought, how do they come back from this? But, you know, a lot of the same players are still there. And Brady's still there, and they just regrouped, didn't they? And they said to themselves, you know what? We weren't far away there, boys. We were this far. You know, we were a fraction. We were a couple of minutes away from automatic promotion. We can go again. And they believed in themselves. And I'm so, so happy for them, actually, and really happy for John Brady. His interview with Michelle Owen on Sky Sports kind of almost brought tears to my eye. I mean, he was sort of sobbing, wasn't he? Very, very emotional. And it just showed this sort of human sacrifice that these managers undertake, you know, in pursuit of success. You really do neglect your family. And it was great that he was able to sort of recognize that in that moment, rather than saying, yeah, I'm going to go out and get hammered. His first thought was to his family, and he wants to spend a bit of quality time with them. I thought it was brilliant.
And then he went out and got hammered anyway.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Well, like in League One, we still had to sort out who was getting the final playoff place. Went to Salford. They finished sixth by virtue of their goal difference being one better than Mansfield. Salford lost at home to Gillingham, whilst the Stags won 2-0 at Colchester. And Sam, I mean, you can pick a number of games during a season and say that was a pivotal moment. But the head-to-head between Salford and Mansfield may be what settled this. Salford won both games, including a 5-2 win at Field Mill, and goal difference ends up separating them. Mansfield will be full of rue about that.
Yeah, and that was the game where I think we analysed it, and it felt like that was the game where Neil Wood switched a little bit and went with real pace, mobility in the forward areas, maybe a little bit more direct. You know, start of the season, they were getting a lot of plaudits for the type of football, the patterns they were executing, and it had been a bit of a contrast maybe to what Salford had been before. So I thought that game, some brilliant goals, Bolton, Hendry, Barry, kind of diminutive front line, loads of pace. They tore Mansfield apart, and it's been a continuation of that, really. They've not been short of goals, although they froze a little bit at the weekend. Matt Smith's come back into the lineup with that aforementioned trio, I think, playing off him. So there's a mixture to their game now. They are unpredictable. I think yesterday shows that against, I think, the second worst team on the road in the division. So you wouldn't have predicted Gillingham going there and probably winning. So it's how Salford, I think, deal with the expectancy and how they do deal with a Stockport side who are used to success. I think the manager's used to success. I think he's got a good pedigree in the playoffs. I think Stockport have got good history in the playoff competitions as well. So that's a tough game. I think Stockport would still be, for me, the team to avoid. You take out the first 11 games of the season when they couldn't get going, they've been the best team in the division. I think they've accrued the most points. So real slow starters, but they're a strong outfit. Strong outfit. I think that'll be a fascinating game. It's got that local element to it as well. And I would suggest, you know, because of Bradford and Carlisle have stuttered a little bit towards the end of the season, that my winners maybe come from that tie.
Yeah, I agree. I think Stockport. I think you look across the Championship and the League One playoffs, and I think really even, hard to pick a winner, but in League Two, I think there's a clearer favourite. I don't know if a Quinbet reflect that in the odds map, but yeah, I think Stockport should win should win the playoffs this season. Very quickly on Mansfield, if you'd have asked them a point at home to Harrogate, who have nothing to play for, in your penultimate match at home will get you into the playoffs, surely they would have been able to do that. And they didn't. They lost 2-1. I think they will look at that game and say, well, that was really where we lost it. I can see where you're coming from with the Salford shout, but really, second last game, you can't be losing at home to Harrogate and expect to get into the playoffs. That was a real shocker.
Yeah, they lost to drunk Leighton Orient as well at home, didn't they, after they'd already secured promotion. We mentioned the odds, Adrian, which was a lovely bit of business from you to tee me up for that. I can tell you that Stockport are indeed the favourites at 13-8 with Quinbet. Bradford 3-1. Carlisle also 3-1. 7-2 if you think Salford will win the playoffs. All right, we are on the closing stretch now, but obviously I've got a tweet of the week for the boys to run the rule over. I think we have done a manager tweet before, but this one caught my eye from Mark Bonner, who is quote tweeting the Cambridge account, which said, "The user staying up, all caps, 3 exclamation marks, heart eyes emojis, hashtag CamUTD, at give us a shout." Bonner said, "The support today and throughout the season has been first class. The drama of today will live long in the memory. Congratulations and thank you to everyone associated at Cambridge United FC." Full stop. "Take a bow, boys!" Exclamation mark. "Forever endeavour." Yellow heart emoji, black heart emoji, hashtag Cam United. He was doing so well, Sam, but "Forever endeavour," that's a booking, isn't it?
I don't think I can have a go at someone's for their punctuation being too good. But that's just too well written, isn't it? Too well scripted. It's first class stuff. "Forever endeavour," I actually enjoy. "Take a bow, boys." He's taking the glory away from himself, and he's showering it on his team. Yeah, and I've worked with him, and he's really nice geezer. And I echo what you said earlier as well. Fair play to the club for sticking by him, and fair play for him sticking at Cambridge as well when he had that opportunity to jump ship and go to Rotherham. So, yeah, well done. I'm not going to have a go at Mark on his big day.
Classy tweet befitting a classy manager, Adrian.
He is a classy guy. I like him. I love his journey. I love the fact that he's managed at all levels of that club. He's worked his way up the hard way. He's not got there on name or reputation as a player. He deserves the job, and I think he's proven to be very, very good at it. Yes, I mean, it's a solid tweet. "Forever endeavour." I mean, that might be just one of his catchphrases. It might be one of those that's pinned up on the tunnel or in the dressing room somewhere. I get it. He's got a little bit of celebrity fans following him as well. I see Max Rushton, the first one on the replies, "Thank you" with a kiss. And then Mark Saggers, "So pleased for you." You know, there's a lot of love out there for Mark Bonner. So, yeah, I'm not going to ruin it and hammer him. I think, yeah, he's been brilliant, and that tweet's fine with me.
Yeah, Jack Collison also getting involved in the replies. Great stuff, my man. So I clicked on Jack Collison's profile, and just for a second, I thought he was head coach of Hull City, but it's actually Hunt City FC, who apparently are in the United States. Huntsville, specifically. Not that you really need to know that, listener. What you do need to know is how to get involved with our social media stuff. Adrian, tell people how they can do that.
Yeah. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok if you want to see us in action. It's at What The EFL, so it's pretty easy. On Twitter, it's at EFL What The. And yeah, we'll promote the podcast. So if you forget to download it or something, there's always a link on there, and you can see some of the best bits too.
Yeah, thank you to everybody who has listened. We had our best ever listening figures for last week's show, so hopefully we can top that again. Do tell a friend, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review if you'd be so kind. It all helps, and we're
in the charts, Matt. Did you see that? We were pretty lofty in the football podcast charts. We were pretty high up on the sports podcast charts. I didn't really even know they existed, but I had a little look, and there we were. So yeah, big thanks to everyone for tuning in. But yeah, please do spread the word, because there's a lot of EFL fans out there probably don't know this is happening.
And before we go, let me give you a reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. And that is going to do it for this episode of What the EFL. We'll be back next week when we'll be rounding up what's happened in the playoff games that have taken place and probably going through a whole list of sackings and transfers as well. Join us for that if you can. For now, though, thanks to Adrian and to Sam and to you, listener. We'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.